It was a good starting point last Saturday, ushering in the Kurt Cignetti era, 31-7 over Florida International, a game which we saw 26 transfer student athletes make their Indiana debut. Coach Kurt, the 16th coach in program history to have won his first game of his Indiana tenure, and the first Indiana coach to do so since Bill Lynch in 2007 when the Hoosiers that day beat Indiana State. Tonight, the Western Illinois Leathernecks drop in from Macomb, Illinois, Indiana's third consecutive Friday night opponent and its seventh overall in program history. We welcome you on board the tailgate on Bloomington's Voice on a Friday night, along with my sidekick Mike Glascott, Joe Smith, and Indiana not expected to have any problems, Mike, after a very solid day's work, for the most part, offensively and defensively. We'll go through some of the better points from the ball game the other night. I know in my long near five decades of work, my job was to, give the final stats, if you will, some of the high points of the ball game, some of the turning points of the ball game. And, you know, after the three and out, I can remember right at the start of the game, Florida International said, no, we won the toss, we want the football. Indiana, you go on defense. Well, the Hoosiers went three and out, but boy, the defense went to work early, didn't they?
They sure did, Smitty, and there was only one statistic that really needed to jump to the forefront in week number one, and that is the W in the win column. That was it. We will make heads or tails of the offense, the defense, special teams, penalties, tackling, not tackle, well, all these great things. But you know, we have football. We don't have to sit here and worry about what we thought we might see. Now we have a little better feel of what the Kurt Cignetti era is going to be about. His coordinators that we highlighted last week, we have a kind of an idea of what they are going to present to give either opposition offenses and defenses trouble. And it was just nice to have football, nice to have the pigskin in the air. And of course, whether you win by 100 or you win by one, well, winning by 24, that was fine for Indiana football. I don't think in week one, Joe, we'll ever talk about this as a, quote, finished product. We shouldn't. There isn't one football team in America right now that's like, oh, okay, great. That worked out great. But you win, you get 26 new faces playing for the first time, 54 guys on your roster that were brand new to this. The opponent, we know, was not going to provide the most resistance. And boy, tonight's opponent's not going to provide any resistance. But to get football under the belt, to get an idea of what it might look like, to start, as you eloquently put it last week, to start memorizing some of the names and numbers of the difference makers on both sides of the ball, it's not going to happen overnight. We can't get to a bowl game winning the first game.
Nope.
But you got to win the first one to keep everybody's spirits high, and we know we're going to win tonight, Joe, because Western Illinois, we'll talk about that later in the show, they're not very good. They've lost 25 straight. I'll tease it with that. But football's back. You and I are back this week, and I'm excited to get after it.
We look at the kids that knew what they were doing. I mean, we didn't know really what to expect. And again, that quick three and out offensively didn't have me worried by any stretch of the imagination. And then,
but it didn't have me jumping out of my seat going, yes. My pom-pom got stuck and I couldn't get it going.
You know, I think back to that spring game and when I first laid my eyes on Aiden Fisher and how he went about business in that spring game. Defensively, I like that kid from the time he laid his hands, on that quarterback and the way they went defensively. And that kind of set the framework, if you will, and a lot of what Brian Haynes was trying to outline to us. And he did so very well to our listeners on our first tailgate show. But then that being said, away went the offense under the handling of Curtis Rourke and that slew of running backs that we got involved. You know, Mike, I thought for the first time out, no turnovers on the afternoon, pretty doggone balanced. And remember, for going out three and out, and when's the last time it's been at least 2 or 3 years since we have seen positive yards rushing the doggone pigskin? We ran the football 40 times and had, over 230 yards. That says a lot with how Bob Bolstad has put this offensive line. Yeah, I know it's early. And the Big Ten opener's out in the Rose Bowl Stadium against UCLA.
That's a big one.
But we ran the football 40 times. for 234 yards and had 23 first downs, moved the sticks, and did a lot of good things.
Early more than late, Joe. First half, second half. We'll talk about those differences as the afternoon or evening rolls on. Kickoff, 7 o'clock, and the defensive side of things. You can't take out FIU's scoring drive, but if you take out the yards, 182, that's a scoring drive of 75. Indiana only allowed 107 yards the rest of the game. So the defensive side of the ball, you saw guys flying around. The offensive side, maybe too many penalties that Kurt Cignetti will want to get cleaned up. Absolutely. But we'll have a busy program for us tonight as we get going. Home game number two, game number two. And when we come back, what do you got for us?
Well, I tell you what, some things that he liked and did not like, and we're talking about the head honcho, and we're talking about Kurt Cignetti. He'll kind of retrace some of the things that he liked, some of the things that he didn't like. When we come back, you're listening to The Tailgate on Bloomington's Voice.
Happy Friday! It's The Tailgate on Bloomington's Voice. We get you ready for Western Illinois and Indiana University football kickoff, 7 o'clock on the Big Ten Network tonight. And Joe, last week, Indiana's offense, I don't think it had the gangbusters, fireworks, pom-poms and everything else that maybe we expected from Kurt Cignetti and Mike Shanahan, but it was efficient. As you mentioned in the open, the Hoosiers did run the football better than we've seen in some time. But I think what we saw with an experienced quarterback, a loaded wide receiver and running back room, plus Bob Bostad's offensive line, we had an idea of what we're going to see. I know it's not the finished product.
Sure. Right.
Against Florida International, Joe, you're not going to bring out your aces and kings and queens, your Bowers. Let's take a look at what we did see and why we're encouraged moving forward. And the numbers, they don't lie. Now, we can pick them apart a little bit, and I'm going to, but the numbers are good. And that's rushing the ball, throwing the ball, sacks given up, and otherwise, it was a good day for Indiana's offense.
Well, I tell you, Curtis Rourke, through the air, efficient, 62%, and he was only sacked, twice? And really, we look at the negative yards in that regard, and neither of his sacks, and it showed his mobility and his composure, I thought, for the most part. And he's been around the block. He showed to me that he's very mature. And
I agree with that, Joe, because what you didn't see, a lot of panic running.
Exactly.
And you didn't see him force throws where there weren't windows to throw the football. And that's why you bring in a 23-year-old quarterback start a new program. So you don't have to coach out those mistakes. You hope you're already ahead of that curve. And this is great where Taven Jackson can learn on the sideline and Tyler Cherry can learn on the sideline. This is what a mature quarterbacking performance looked like, even though it did not put up the fantasy football numbers that some people were hoping for.
Well, and again, we average a little over, nearly 6.5 yards a play, and ran 65 plays on Saturday against the Panthers. So a lot of good positives to look at, and especially in that second quarter, Indiana went to work offensively with the run game. And, boy, you know, we saw Elijah Green late, but Tyson Lawton was the go-to guy for the most part. He had 16 rushes, and we didn't see any losses behind the line of scrimmage. And, again, that was a testament to the offensive line with its splits and how they were blocking up front. And
for FIU, Joe, last year gave up almost 200 yards a day rushing. So I would have been more disappointed, Smitty, if they ran it 40 times for 148 yards and couldn't get any push up front and couldn't take contact and drive it forward. But like you mentioned, how many times did we lose yards? It wasn't very often in the backfield. So that is encouraging. Getting that push up front, experienced guys who have carried the football at D1 Power 5 schools or Power 4 schools or whatever we're calling this now, you're not waiting and hoping. You're giving it to guys with experience and some miles on those tires.
So, you know, in looking at it total, when Kurt talked to us earlier in the week, he was, it was a starting point. You know, one game does not a season make, but it was a good starting point.
Had a couple clunker drives there at the end of the third quarter, fourth quarter offensively. Penalties, obviously, too many on offense, got to cut those out. You know, I think we had 7 second 11 pluses and 6 third and 11 pluses. Some were 17, 21. So things that we can teach on tape, obviously, all correctable. last drive of the second quarter. Crucial missed assignment on third and five. We should have that play nailed dead. Guy didn't do what he was supposed to do, but like the way we came out. So we didn't finish the second half the way we want to finish the second half. That's always a point of emphasis. But we did start the third quarter by stopping them and driving down the field, and we ended up kicking a field goal. Should have scored a touchdown. So special teams was solid, and I thought the effort was good.
So something to build on, and as Glass alluded to when we first started tonight, a number of guys had the opportunity to play, and this will only build, and it will certainly build tonight, not putting the cart in front of the horse. We expect it to build, and we're talking personnel-wise, offensively, the guys up front, some more key.
You thought you needed a program last week.
Yeah,
you better. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Tonight, you better be ready, Joe.
Yeah.
We'll see the depth from the running back room. We'll see the depth in the wide receiver room as well. And you know what we're going to see? We're probably going to see multiple quarterbacks, because I just don't think a team that gave up 706 yards last week, that lost 25 games in a row, there's no point to leave everybody out there, Smitty. So I think you're going to get plenty of run on both sides of the ball. And Kurt Cignetti mentioned special teams. Kick the ball off, you kick it in the end zone every time. Yep. James Evans is James Evans. He's been there for 100 years. He's on the watch list. And Nico Radicic knocked down everything he looked at. So not a lot of warbles and fumbles and knocking the ball around.
No.
But that's a great start, and that's all you can ask for.
And mentioning that, when we continue on, Curtis Rourke will talk about something that he will work on here in tonight's game, and that is developing the rhythm.
When we come back, quarterback talk. We'll get to the defensive side of the ball. The Hall of Famer is Joe Smith. I'm Mike Glasgow. This is The Tailgate on WGCL. All right, welcome back to Tailgate on WGCL. Special Friday night edition, since our friends at the Big Ten Network are going to put Indiana football on a Friday night this Friday. Western Illinois is the opponent. They've lost 25 straight. They are in town tonight on a beautiful, beautiful late summer's eve here in Bloomington. The Hall of Famer is Joe Smith. Smitty, we're talking quarterbacks. Curtis Rourke, 23 years of age, had a bunch of favorite targets to get to in game number one. He was efficient. You expect him to be cool in the pocket. I think he was all of that. What caught your eye from the Ohio transfer?
That he had been there, done that, and we saw that immediately after that first three and out, and away they went with the offense. The number of receivers that we talked to, Glass, you and I.
How many did he hit, Joe? How many guys did he find on the day?
Well, seven total on the day. But, two, he incorporated a lot of different running backs. We talked about that balance, the pass and the run, how the run can set up the pass, vice versa. And so, you know, in reviewing the tape from the game, you know, Rourke saw both things and how the Hoosiers can improve, not only himself, but as a team.
I think we had some really great stretches of moving the ball really well, running the ball, passing the ball really well. And then we kind of had some drives where, you know, we like to have back. Personally, I like to have a couple throws back here and there, and I'm sure that's in a lot of areas, a lot of people on the field. And so it was, you know, a good learning game to kind of move on. And I think we had just a good, you know, consistency of both running the ball and passing the ball, not trying to do too much on all aspects, and kind of just sticking to what we're good at and just, you know, playing the game. Being more consistent. Three drives are really, really good in the sense that we were balanced all the way around and just, you know, did the easy things. And I think that fell away from us, you know, in the second half especially. And so if we can put a game together that's consistent throughout, I think we'll be much more happy with the result.
And you can always play a little trivia after Curtis Rourke leaves Indiana with gobs of touchdown passes. Who was the young man that caught Mr. Rourke's first Indiana touchdown? Well, on that drive, it was Zach Horton, that good-looking tight end.
And another James Madison transfer, Joe.
Exactly, and he's going to be a good one. It was a little play action there, and boom, got Indiana's first touchdown.
I thought those first three drives after, all resulting in touchdowns, were well-balanced, Joe. You didn't feel any gimmickiness to the offense. You just lined up. You blocked who you had to block. You did your job, and you moved the ball down the field. I don't want to say I was disappointed in the second half, but I don't think there's anybody watching that film on Sunday morning last week who ran down and said, "Oh, geez, let's celebrate what went on in the second half there." They had a trick play with Lawton, who always Cooper's well, wide open. He just didn't make the throw. The offense just didn't keep firing in half number two, and I think that's part of the self-examination afterwards. Why didn't it? What did we miss? What wasn't going on? Well, penalties reared their ugly head, didn't they?
First and foremost, put Indiana in deep down in distance, and that really hurt the overall moving of the chains. And, you know, Indiana's overall third down conversion rate was 4 of 10, and it could have been a heck of a lot better had it not been for the penalties. What do we – Well, he got flagged one too many times, nine, I think, on the day, wasn't it, for about...
Nine or ten, I can't remember. One of them was on special teams, one on defense, and the other seven on offense, Joe. So when you get into second and 14, third and 16, those aren't convertible. So it doesn't matter whether you're playing, well, maybe it won't tonight against a Western Illinois team. It gives up 700 yards, but... when you dig that hole, I think that's the correctable part Kurt Cignetti was talking about on the film when you say, hey, look, in our practices, we don't always have officials, which I thought was interesting. They don't bring in officials for all their practices. And to have all these penalties, they say, well, he mentioned, now we watch it, now we have correctable errors and the consequences that go with them. But he didn't think it was too bad. He just thought maybe guys are a little too handsy in some areas. So, again, a fixable issue, Joe, not four interceptions where you got to talk me off the ledge, not six fumbles, three fumbles, or false starts and in silly illegal motions and things like that. You didn't see a lot of that because the guys that put this offense together, they Shanahan, Cignetti, Sinceri, all those guys have been together so long, they have a good working relationship.
And that's what – they know each other. They know what to expect. Nine penalties for 80 yards. We always like to be perfect when we can. And so we want to dial that back in from last Saturday. Don't think it's going to be near that later tonight against the Fighting Leathernecks.
So. Probably not. I don't know why ESPN has given them a 3.8% chance of winning. I'm not sure where they would have gotten that from. They've lost 25 straight, Joe. They haven't scored more than 15 points in their last eight outings. Brand new coach. We'll talk about them in the scouting report. But when we come back, let's get to the defensive side of the ball.
Your
buddies, Aiden Fisher and Jalen Walker, those linebackers flew around.
20 tackles between them.
And the defensive line, as my 10-year-old son pointed out, Dad, those are some pretty big guys. Wow. Well, we always haven't had a lot of pretty big guys. Had one or two over the years. But it looks like we have some Big Ten size, Joe, from James Madison up front and some athletic kids in the defensive secondary as well. When we return, we will get caught up with Bryant Haynes' defense and their very productive day. 7 o'clock kickoff tonight. You're listening to The Tailgate on Bloomington's Voice, WGCL.
And welcome back to The Tailgate on Bloomington's Voice. Joe Smith, along with my sidekick, Mike Glascott, a Friday night leading up to kick a little past 7 o'clock against the Fighting Leathernecks of Western Illinois. Well, we talk a little about the defense and how they kind of set the foundation on that first series of the ball game last Saturday. We had 20 guys. You know, I went up and down the stat sheet like I like to do defensively, and Aiden Fisher, we kind of talked about what Aiden and Jalen Walker did between them, the two linebackers. They had 20 total tackles, but 20 guys with at least one solo holding FIU to 53 yards rushing and 182 total yards and only 7 points, but 20 guys, just think of that with at least one solo. But Indiana had 8 tackles for loss and 4 total tackles. And we look at one young man, he played last year for Indiana, but last year he was a transfer. And we're talking about Marcus Burris Jr. He played on the outside at Rush End. And, you know, as I say, he was a transfer last year. But, boy, what a difference a year makes. What a difference a game makes. He came in, and, you know, Fisher's been the leader of the entire defense. We go all the way back to winter ball, the spring game, fall camp. And here's Burris in this ball game. He had three total tackles, a sack, and a tackle for a loss. And he is ready now to create, along with his playmates tonight, more havoc in Brian Haynes' scheme.
I think we did a really good job attacking. I know it's kind of different from it was last year. We've kind of focused on attacking the ball, leaving no regrets on the field. Obviously, we're not where we want to be, so every week we're just going to continue to push to get better and better. The way things went last year, I didn't want to bring anything from last year over to this year. I wanted to start clean, and I wanted to be a part of a changing program, and so far we feel like we've done that, so we're going to hope to continue to. Fish is the ultimate leader that you want to have behind you on defense. From every call to making a tackle, getting up, celebrating with the guys, like, Fish is on it 100%, and I wouldn't want to have anybody back there at linebacker. So Fish definitely that guy.
We were talking about how many guys got involved offensively. There were just as many guys, Glass, that got involved disrupting things for Indiana in that ball game. And we're talking, as you alluded to, tackles for loss and sacks. And it wasn't just one or two guys making the plays. But again, this was something that we were alerted to by Brian Haynes and the guys that we had talked to in our preseason show.
Well, that's why we like to see it, Joe, because all we can – we heard about it. It was nice to go out and do that. 182 yards, I don't care who you're playing. If you give up less than 200 yards,
no question.
You've done something well defensively. The way they flew around the football, Joe, and then there's two things. You've watched more football than anybody. You see sometimes the fake hustle. You know, the guy that gets to the pile late and dives on the pile. No, you didn't see any undisciplined penalties. You didn't see guys jumping off sides because they're too jacked up, ready to go. You didn't see anything silly. It was a mature performance.
Very mature.
Now, we didn't have turnovers, takeaways, or others. Just one, Amari Farrell. He's just a sophomore, though, right?
Yeah.
So you got young kids in the secondary, Farrell and Pons, who stood up and were counted. And you didn't have guys running into each other. You didn't have blown coverages. You didn't have a lot of things you normally see in the first week or the first game of a new season, a new era, a new system, and all the above. So all things considered, I thought Indiana's defense probably shaded it more than the offense. And, again, flying to the football and playing hard, you can tell me all about you're going to do that. I need to see it, and I think I saw it on Saturday afternoon. And I think the other part is, I think there's some real size there. Now,
oh, gosh.
I'm going to wait till you line up against Ohio State that goes 6-6,
or
6-6,
even
6-6,
next
6-6,
week.
6-6, 6-6, 6-6, 6-6 across the front. And then we'll see how,
sure,
quote-unquote, big they are. But playing hard, being disruptive, and getting after it. How many big plays did Florida International have? We were kind of knocking Indiana's offense there for not exploding and getting too many big chunk plays over 20 yards. But I don't remember Florida International, Joe, having any big plays at all. Let's give Bryant Haynes and the defense credit.
Well, and another thing, you know, they score their lone touchdown. They score their lone touchdown late in the first half, and they get the football to start the second half. So how key was that defensive series to start the second half? Very key. And again,
any momentum they thought they,
sure,
had, Joe, was out the window. And you should be able to take the momentum away from FIU. And
yeah,
they did. That's all you can ask them to do. It would have been great if it was a shutout. It wasn't. 107 yards outside of that touchdown drive.
Yeah.
Full credit where credit is
no
due.
Question. And straight ahead, we'll have a scout on tonight's opponent, Western Illinois, and hear from Big Ten Commissioner Tony Petitti. When we come back, you're listening to The Tailgate on Bloomington's Voice. Welcome back, everyone, to The Tailgate on Bloomington's Voice. Glass, I know you had the distinction of making this...
Whose idea was this, Joe?
making this sound positive, and that's tonight's opponent. They have struggled. And that is putting it mildly.
Joe, what was the last year they won a game?
2021.
They have lost 25 straight, folks. And taking the opponent scouting report, yes, I did volunteer for this. This week, Joe, it will not take very long. It's 25 consecutive losses. 8 of their last 9 games, they have scored 10 points or less. Joe, they scored 15 against Western Illinois, or against Northern Illinois last week, did Western Illinois. So the Leathernecks, they're struggling. The head coach is Joe Davis. He used to be Eastern Illinois' offensive coordinator. In game one, his defense gave up 706 yards. His offense, well, they didn't do much better. They only scored 15 points. They lost their top 7 wide receivers, their top 2 running backs off a team that didn't win any games last year, that didn't score any points last year. Why Indiana has scheduled Western Illinois, that might be a better topic of discussion for some time down the road. But it is a preseason game, Joe, in a non-conference world. It's a game where a lot of guys are going to play. That's going to help Kurt Cignetti and his staff get tape on guys who they think are practicing well. Now you put them out there in the stadium with the lights on, with TV. But Nathan Lamb is the quarterback for Western Illinois. He did throw for 204 yards last week and a touchdown, 17 of 29. He did rush the ball 8 times for 28 yards with a long of 15. But there's just not a whole lot that this Western Illinois team should bother Indiana with. It was 6-3 after one quarter. Then Northern Illinois exploded for 28 points in the second and blew the game out in the third. 706 yards against. And it wasn't just because Northern Illinois' quarterback, Joe, went crazy. They threw for 394. They rushed for 312. There wasn't much of any resistance. So whatever Kurt Cignetti was not happy with in half number two against FIU, they should get healthy quickly. And it begs the point, Joe, yeah. You've been around some blowouts in your time when we've played some of these schools. Do you give your starters a half, three quarters? When do you pull the plug? Because Indiana's going to have to pull the plug here. If not, that's going to be a tough one to explain of why Indiana did not destroy Western Illinois.
Well, I mean, you know, it's at the head coach's discretion and the coordinators who's playing hard. And, you know, I tell you one thing, if they're not playing hard, if they're going about it in a nonchalant, they're coming out. And
As they should. But with an experienced team, a lot of guys that have played a lot of football, I don't think that'll be an issue. So I hope the young guys get a chance to eat. Friday Night Football, what are we doing? What are we doing?
I feel. Well, you're asking the wrong guy because you know how I'm feeling about it.
The third year in a row, and I understand why it's always about money. It's always about money, and it's always about money. And if you think it's not about money, it's about money. And I wish we could find a way, but we can't. And we need to explain that to our listeners because we can get as mad as we want. But Tony Petitti told us.
Yeah.
It's about money, and if you want to pay these players, and if you want to reap these benefits, you have to do what TV says.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, as he told the assembled back earlier in the summer, it ain't going to be changing anytime soon, as he told us in July.
Yeah, I think part of if you look at our footprint on Saturday, having the three broadcast partners supported by the cable presence and Big Ten Network, I think Friday's an opportunity for national exposure. So I think you're going to see some programs there really embrace the opportunity to play on Friday. Of course, we don't want to burden any one institution. You know, we care about what happens at the stadium as well and what happens on campus. But if you look at it, it's an opportunity to get programs to showcase them as they build and in matchups. And so I think, you know, for us to have that footprint is really terrific. I think on the hurdle side, look, there are just traditional places that want to play more on Saturday. We understand and respect that. It's a league discussion about that involves all 18 about the best way to format our schedule, where coaches are embracing opportunities to have that exposure on Friday night. We try to lean into that. And so that's the way we approach it. Where are we more likely to go? That'll change over time. But I think collectively we all understand that we're doing this together, and we've got to make every telecast opportunity work for the conference to be as strong and healthy as we can.
Well, Joe, there it is. That's the man that's in charge. That's the man that the league presidents and chancellors hired. He wasn't given to the Big Ten. He was hired by the Big Ten. So, Joe, everyone's complicit in this.
You can read between the lines, and the lines had dollars and cents at the end of each line that he spoke, and that was Tony Petitti. Former baseball commissioner, wasn't he?
He was the big TV guy for MLB and helped do all those deals. So all he knows is TV and money, Joe. And to put it on Friday nights.
That's the name of the game, is it not?
That's it, buddy.
Well, you know, this is Indiana's, you know, just some numbers. Indiana's 4-2, if you like numbers. This is the seventh time we've been playing. We have played a game on Friday night, third consecutive. Gosh, I remember, and I think you Indiana fans do too, we played a bucket game on a Friday night back in 95 with Purdue. Got slaughtered. It came right around Thanksgiving weekend. I can remember during the Mal years, we went up on a Friday and played Minnesota. That was the year that the Twins were in the American League playoffs, and they had to, and that was when we were playing at the Metrodome. And I tell you what, that was very eventful. Indiana had to withstand a Jim Gallery ball that hit the and rattled the doggone goalpost. I thought it was in, losing that game, but we won 18-17, and that was the very first year that Indiana played a Friday night game. It was October 16th, 1987. And that was out of necessity because we couldn't play in the Dome the next day.
And when we come back, we'll take a look around the league, the top 25 scoreboard, the Big Ten matchups on the weekend as well. You're listening to The Tailgate on WGCL.
Western Illinois and the Hoosiers, week number two, as we glance at what is going on. We mentioned one other Friday night game going on, Duke and Northwestern along the shores of Lake Michigan. Northwestern, a bit of a struggle in week number one, putting away Miami of Ohio. That was one of my upset picks of the week, and it almost came to fruition, Glass.
Pitcher's duel, Smitty, 13-6. Did you see the new stadium that Indiana's going to play in up there?
You know,
it's right up against the lake. It was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
They had a bright, sunny day. It looked like
17,000 now is capacity.
Well, that's usually what they get.
Well, I mean, that's the way the old stadium used to be. But
I like it. I'm like
laughing.
It.
And,
now, Northwestern, Joe, only allowed 267 yards, but their offense was behind. But this Northwestern here recently has been a defensive team. So 13-6 there. You know what they did? They won. And the Big Ten had a good week last week.
17-1, save for the North Carolina 19-17 win on a Thursday night. It would be 18-0, but I tell you what, you're going to have to get used to, you know, popping some no-dos. It's like, you know, studying for finals if you want to watch. And I did stay up and watch that USC-LSU game, and boy, that targeting call late in the contest was was the game.
How many bad penalties
LSU
had a bad penalty every other drive, celebrating in the end zone, dancing around. Brian Kelly, man, you
don't
can,
get me started.
You
on
can have them, but that's a big win,
Bengals.
Joe, because that's a that's a neutral site. That's a they are yeah. USC is a Big Ten team.
Yeah, I've heard for the Big Teners.
And that last minute touchdown was a backbreaker. 27-20, they win the Modelo Kickoff Classic at Allegiant Stadium. In Las Vegas.
The other late nighter, Washington looked, you know, they beat Weber State 35-3, some of the late nighters. But, you know, hey, Big Ten time for Indiana out to Rose Bowl Stadium in Pasadena next Saturday night against UCLA, who struggled to beat Hawaii, but they got the W, 16-13, just some of the games. People say, although you'd never kick a W to the curb, but Oregon struggled with Idaho,
Joe,
24-14.
They were 45.5 point favorites.
Yeah.
They didn't score 45 points.
Guess what? They didn't cover.
They did not cover, and I don't know if the fighting potatoes from Idaho are what they have, but that was almost the biggest. That was the biggest surprise. Now Northwestern, we know, struggles early in the year. They almost lose to a MAC team. It feels like annually. But when I saw that Oregon Idaho score, that stopped me in my tracks because Oregon was the top five. What are they ranked? They're in the top five in the country.
Well, they're still number three this week.
I don't know how that's possible, but I guess when no one else loses besides Florida State, there's nowhere to drop anybody. So that would have been a very inauspicious start for the Ducks in Dan Lanning as they kick off their Big Ten year. You talk about UCLA-Hawaii, Joe. UCLA outscored Hawaii 16-3 in the second half. That's a big road trip, even from Los Angeles. UCLA is off this weekend because you go out to Hawaii, they give you the week off on the backside of it. And the other game that jumped out, I know Michigan State-FAU 16-10. Michigan State's defense was awfully good. FAU had the ball three times in the fourth quarter that they could have taken the lead. I don't think Michigan State's offense was very good. But and then Michigan, Joe, they're leading 16-10, 10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter against Fresno. The final score there at the Big House.
Very deceiving.
Very deceiving. Why is that a big deal? Because on WGCL tomorrow morning at 11:30, we'll have pregame from the Big House. Texas is in town for Michigan. Noon kickoff.
26-game winning streak against non-conference opponent at the Big House, by the way. A couple of teams are going to bother me because they got new coordinators. Well, Iowa, you know, they only led 6-0 at half. They put up 40 against Illinois State. And when's the last time Iowa has scored 40 points offensively? And also Nebraska had 40 against UTEP. And look for Nebraska to cause some problems once we get into league play. And by the way, Glass, we have our first league game. Michigan State and Maryland, they're going to be playing in College Park, Maryland. It'll be the season's first Big Ten contest.
Exciting time, Smitty. 17-1 last week. We'll take a look at the schedule. We'll get you our picks on Indiana, Western Illinois. We'll review our 4-0 week last week with FIU, and we'll do it when we come back. It's the Tailgate on WGCL. For the final time on the Tailgate here on a Friday night. Stick around. High school football with the Hall of Famer and Dave Novak is next. Our broadcast game on a Friday night. Terre Haute North and Bloomington South from Huff Memorial on the south side of Bloomington. Last week, the Big Ten, as Joe mentioned, went 17-1. This week, we've got, 18 more chances. A little bit different competition this time around, Smitty. Yeah. Give us the highlights of the week's schedule and what's on tap for, the rest of Friday night and on Saturday tomorrow.
Well, I tell you, again, one Friday night game alongside ours, and that is Duke tonight, taking on Northwestern along the shores.
I wonder how warm it's going to be there, Joe.
It probably is beyond sweater weather, so you better...
it's going to get down to 50 here.
Zip it up.
Wear that snowmobile suit. Those pocket protectors can only keep you so warm.
All right, let's take a look at Saturday's games. Rutgers, they won easily in their opener. They're at home against Akron, mentioning zips. At Piscataway at noon. Penn State got a nice start, and boy, mentioning new coordinators, they have won offensively, and they put up some nice numbers. They're at home against Bowling Green.
Well, and their defensive coordinator is Indiana former head coach Tom Allen, so yeah. That's always an interesting – that'll be an interesting one at some point, Joe, just not this year for Hoosier fans.
But I think the interesting game tomorrow will be the one taking place in Ann Arbor as the ninth-ranked Wolverines hook up with fourth-ranked Texas. Now, this will mark just the second time that these two have met, and the first in the regular season. Now, Texas won the only previous meeting, and it was a bang-bang affair – 38-37 on a last-second field goal in the 91st Rose Bowl back in 06. So that one will get off the ground.
That is the big noon kickoff, Joe, on
right
Fox on tomorrow.
And right here on the airwaves.
That's exactly right. Take us with you wherever you go. Is that Archie Miller playing at Minnesota tomorrow? Noon on Peacock? Look at that.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, against the Rhode Island Reds, Eastern Michigan at Washington as they make the trek out to the Pacific Northwest in Seattle. We mentioned the lone Big Ten game. It'll have a 3:30 start in Michigan State at Maryland. Both off to 1-0 starts. South Dakota at Wisconsin in Madison at 3:30. And the other 3:30 game.
Big one, Joe.
Oh, it is indeed big. And we'll see if Iowa can beat Iowa State. And that one will be at Kinnick Stadium. And then the nighttime affairs, Kansas and Illinois – over in Urbana, Nebraska, Colorado, that isn't shabby now. That has a 7:30 start out at Memorial Stadium in Lincoln and Ohio State at Western Michigan. You can name the score there as Boise State will play at Oregon. The other late nighters, Utah State at USC, and that will be the bill of fare for this seventh day coming up on Saturday.
Insomniacs, rejoice. Utah, USC, Joe, 11 p.m., Big Ten Network, Boise State, Oregon, 10 o'clock on Peacock. So just this weekend, on Saturday, Big Ten Network, Peacock, NBC, FS1, CBS, and Big Fox. That's where the money comes from. That's why we're playing football tonight, Joe, because that's what it's all about. Well, I tell you what, we let our listeners off, anybody who joined us last weekend. Thank you. We appreciate it. Before FIU, Joe and I gave our projections last week. And, Smitty, you had a big Indiana win. Hoosiers?
42-3.
And Indiana wins 31-7. So you had the under and the spread that went up to game day. Went all the way up to 24 on game day.
Oh, it did?
You were hoping that last touchdown would be scored. Yes. But so you, by your point total, under and the Hoosiers. And I said it was going to be, I can't remember what, I think maybe 38-10. I don't know what my exact prediction was. I didn't think it would be a high-scoring affair.
No, you said under.
The under was my best bet, and I thought Indiana, I went with you and said they were going to cover up. They did barely.
Thank you, Elijah Green.
That's it. 2-0 for Smitty and Glass. Joe, we know Indiana's going to win this week. We're not hiding that from anybody. How big do you make it based on who's going to play and what Western Illinois did last week?
Well, I think it'll get in the 60s from an offensive standpoint.
I think it needs to. I think they need to feel good about their offense.
Well, you're not, even if Taven, you know, some of the other guys get in at quarterback and some of the other running backs, you're not going to tell them not to score.
I don't think you're going to, you know, quote unquote, break out against UCLA on the road in the Rose Bowl. This would be a nice feel good game to rack it up a little bit.
And I think 63-6.
That should cover if there is a line. I think Indiana wins comfortably. I think the big number is going to be zero. I think this defense, from what I saw last week against FIU, Joe.
I was disappointed that they scored a touchdown, to be honest with you.
Well, that was in the second quarter, so that the game was still in doubt there, but the game won't be in doubt this time.
And after
around.
What I saw of our defense, I liked it.
I like it as well. Indiana, a comfortable winner later tonight. Folks, don't go anywhere. Chalk Talk is next.
Yep.
Joe Smith, Dave Novak, the South Side, Bloomington South, and Terre Haute North. Thanks to everybody who tuned in tonight. We'll be back next week. IU, UCLA.
Big Ten opener.
And the tailgate is over.